This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Back of the chest. Coronavirus Self-Isolation Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Back of the Nest Lockdown Sessions. My name is Mike and I'm in for Hambo this week because he's not feeling too good. We've got a special show for you with former Palace midfielder Neil Dans joining myself, Patrick and Chris for a chat about lockdown, football and generally how life is post-Palace for him. We'll be back right after this.
No paywall, no subscription. Back of the Nest. Fan-created podcasts, videos and articles. Free forever.
So, yes, we realise that it's amazing that you've carried on listening to us through 18 episodes of Back of the Nest without any football happening in that time. So we wanted to mix it up. So we went and got a special guest for you and we're excited to chat to him. Just before that, though, a quick hello to my panel. Patrick, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm okay. Had a virtual stag do yesterday, which was a bit surreal. Just 20 people on a chat. And I'm going to go a few days without drinking. How is another week in Trump's lockdown hell, though? What have you been up to?
Yeah, you mentioned virtual. I had actually my son graduated virtually from law school this week. So that was different. So after we had a Zoom party for him virtually again. So, yeah, that whole Zoom thing is very interesting, the whole virtual stuff. But, you know, I mean, it is what it is. I got to play golf again yesterday, so that was fun. But I don't talk about Trump because there's nothing to talk about. But that aside, we've had some restrictions lifted over here, which is so it's getting a little better day by day. So just basically hanging in there, doing the best we can.
Excellent, excellent. And Chris, how's life been treating you in God's country, Croydon?
Well, obviously, you know, I'm supremely lucky to be based here in Croydon, you know, going outside all the time, as I am not. Life's all right. I mean, doing Zoom taverns and all of that stuff and counting down the days until football eventually comes back. As you know, we shared an impromptu lockdown tavern on Friday evening, which he's partly the result of you now for swearing the booze for a few days. I'm going to test your resolve on that and we'll report back on the pod in due course.
Yeah, I mean, just to put a bit of perspective in that, four blokes talking for what turned out in the end to be 9 hours. I got through so much beer and then this stag day the next day. I don't want to age prematurely, so I think there's a few days without beer will be a good call. Yeah, so let's get to the housekeeping before we chat to Neil Dans. Mainly our sponsor, the Pitch Sport app. So they've been sponsoring us now for a little while. And what I would say is, you know, we don't hide behind a paywall or anything like that. We don't ask you to contribute money. So it'd be great if you could have a look at their app. It's free to download. It's the brainchild of several people, including John Sulaco. It's well worth having a look. Hambo's got a code on there if you want to befriend him and just end up chatting about games. Obviously, there's not too much at the moment, but he'll be back soon. And you can obviously do the German games if you're that way inclined. Hambo's friend code is KUGKUT. And it's a fan time question of the week, that kind of thing. Just have a look at it. It might not be your thing. It might be your thing. So just download it, have a look. Follow us on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, all of that lovely stuff. We're going to be promoting a little bit of Neil Danzy's YouTube channel this week on there, as well as the usual stuff. And mainly what we'd ask in return as well, if you can go onto iTunes, give us a 5-star review, help more Palace fans get to know us. We don't do this for the money or anything like that. We just love more people to continue to listen to us. And we thank you for the several thousand people that do, regardless of the fact that there's no actual football. One other thing, if you want to leave any voice notes, you can do that by adding us as a contact on WhatsApp. The number is 0203 575 1266. And without further ado, let us have a quick break and we will be joined by Neil Danz.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Reviews, predictions, comments and rants. Send us your voice clips on WhatsApp. 0203 575 1266.
Okay, so as we've mentioned, we've got a very special guest today joining us. Neil Danz, how you doing?
I'm good, thanks. And yourself?
Yeah, not bad at all. I mean, people have listened to us now. I think we're about 18 episodes into doing this during lockdown, so people are sick of hearing about us. So let's hear a little bit about how you've been coping with lockdown. Like, how have you been finding it? What have you been up to? How have you been keeping yourself busy?
To be honest, if I'm being honest, it hasn't been too bad at all. I've got 3 kids, so they keep me busy enough. But it's also just given me a chance to sort of have a look at other avenues. Obviously, I think you're aware about the stuff I've been doing online with the Danzy One Show, which is on YouTube, Facebook and Twitter, which goes live and stuff. So, yeah, just finding other avenues to just use me creativity and stuff. And also, obviously, it's given me a lot of time just to polish up on the music stuff as well, which I've been doing at an engineering course in for the last couple of years.
Oh, great. Oh, yeah, we got a bit of questions about the music in a bit. If you just want to plug your YouTube channel a bit more, I saw that you got an interview with Emil Heskey. We'll put a link out on Twitter and stuff, share it about for people that haven't seen it. But just give us the sort of vibe about what you're trying to achieve with it.
You'll see, if anyone who's seen it, it's just about spreading a little bit of positivity. All the interviews, just looking back on people's careers and just giving people out there something, a bit of content. I know myself, and during these times, sometimes you get spare couple of hours and you're bored. And you know what I mean? It just gives you something different to watch. Obviously, we've had like Emil Heskey on there, UK rapper and footballer Kamikaze. And next Friday, I've got Tony Bellew on. So, which should be a good one as well. It's just like I say, getting good guests on, like I say, especially the likes of Emil Heskey, Kamikaze, Tony Bellew. They've all got really interesting stories. So, just allows them to show themselves in other lights.
I was going to say I love listening to Tony Bellew. He's a very interesting man. So, looking forward to that one. Yeah, we'll share them about for you. But for people that haven't seen it, Well worth a look. And then in terms of, it's been talked about to death, but get your opinion on it. Presumably you're still in contract with Tranmere. Like, what's happening with the leagues? What do you want to happen? And what's your opinion about how things are going for the EFL clubs?
I think it's a weird one because, like we all know, it's unprecedented times. It's never been done before. There's no easy solutions and stuff, but I've heard the talk over the last couple of days about teams getting relegated, who are in that position and stuff. And obviously, we come into that category. We're currently 3 points off safety with a game in hand. And obviously, on won our last three games. So I think it'd be very harsh to just relegate teams, as simple as that, because like you say, clubs, you know what I mean, they work hard throughout the season to try and keep that status of the league they're in. And I think we've really come to the fore in the last three games. So to just relegate us after working so hard to get back in it would be wrong. I think there's no real answer, but I think it'd make sense if they promoted sides but there was no relegations, and then obviously we'd have a couple of extra more games in the season next year. But I think that would be served a lot better than just playing with like some clubs' futures, because some clubs are banking on being in League One and wanted to obviously finish off the season.
Yeah. I mean, as you say, very difficult. It's somebody's going to get upset, whatever happens. So what's your situation with Tranmere? How long have you got left for the contract, and how do you see it going in the future if you do get to restart?
I'm up at the end of this season, and obviously I'm 37 years of age now, so every season you just count as a blessing. But obviously I'd love to keep playing for Tranmere next season and stuff, but obviously none of us know what's going to happen. There's a lot of people out of contract this season at the club, but you can't really... It's hard for the club to do anything or to make any decisions because, like you say, this has never been seen before. So we're all just going to wait and see and obviously hope for the best. But like I said, if we can get the season up and running again, I think that would be perfect because, like I say, it gives a lot of the lads who are out of contract a chance to obviously show Tranmere and other clubs that might be looking.
Yeah, okay, well, I hope that goes well, and we will keep people posted on that, as I'm sure you will as well. So what I do use as a sort of springboard for talking about your time at Palace, an interview that came up recently on the Palace website about your time being signed by Warnock, getting an injury straight away, and how things went throughout your Palace career. I'll let you talk about it quickly. I've just got a couple of comments from listeners. I told you that we'd hit you with ones that were maybe a little bit difficult to answer. So Brad Campagnac, thanks Brad. Should he have stayed longer and why did he leave? Palace Roberto, 78. I really, really liked Neil Dansley. He was a huge ray of light for us at a dark time, a real fighter and scored some important goals. I wanted you to ask if he wanted to go or he had to leave. And then Adam Palace just saying, why didn't he sign a new contract? So I know you wanted to put the record straight, as it said in that interview. So perhaps this is a good platform to do that now, Neil.
Yeah. Obviously at the time, the club was going through a lot of change and it was a rough period for the club at that time. And obviously I'd been there 3.5 years. And then it come to obviously the end of my contract, and there was an offer on the table from Palace, and which I was so grateful at the time for as well. But it just at that moment in time, with everything that had gone on, it being an emotional season, it being a tough one, especially for myself as well. I was playing in the last year of my contract. Obviously, while all the stuff with the administration was going on and everything, I literally didn't know what was going to be happening. So I was sort of preparing like I wasn't going to be there like earlier on, not in terms of like you're preparing like you switch off mentally or anything. But as we know, we went into administration, and anyone who has read Neil Warnock's book will understand that I was one of the players who was put up for sale. By Palace, because obviously they needed to fund the administration and stuff. So I was thinking, what is happening here? Like, I don't know where I'm going to be. I'm getting phone calls from administrators saying that clubs have made offers for me. It actually got to the point where I went to speak to Alan Pardew. He was at Southampton. I'd gone up to... I had Swansea on the phone to me, who were flying high as well, and literally at that time, Neil Warnock said to me, like, there's nothing he could do about it, but the only person that could really do anything about it was me. And if I chose to go, no one could stop me because of the, obviously, the situation the club was in. But he basically told me that he wanted me to stay and fight through the season because the club was in a tough spot. So I chose to stay. I turned down the offers at the time, which was good offers. I think Swansea went on to get promoted to the Premier League that season or the season after. But I turned them down to stay because obviously Palace had been loyal to me in the sense that when I first signed, I had a long-term injury, which was at the time really, really scary because I honestly thought like I'm going to have to retire early because I had a niggle and groin injury that literally just wouldn't go away. And then I had to have a sort of major operation on my groins. And then that cleared it up. And I was thankful for obviously Neil Warnock and the club and everyone supporting me through that. And then, like I say, once I got in the team after that injury, I just give me all, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone could accuse you of anything else other than that. So I'm going to hand over now to my colleague, Chris. He's going to discuss a few memories about particular times during your Palace career. Chris, do you want to shoot him?
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Mike. And, you know, fantastic to speak to you, Neil. I mean, I have particularly vivid memories of your time at Palace. You know, some of the goals that you scored, you know, some of which were, you know, really spectacular and some of which were really important. And obviously you played in some, you know, really memorable games for us. I wanted to start, though, actually, with just something a little bit more detail about the administration. Like, were you actually on the plane when that information started to filter through, and what were your feelings at that moment?
I was on the plane and obviously we're flying up to Newcastle, and we didn't really know until we landed, because obviously everyone's phones were off and stuff. And then obviously we landed and we were still in with a shouted of the playoffs at that point and stuff. So you land and you just think, what's happening here? Because one minute everything's good, you're looking positive, and then literally within the space of a couple of hours, you don't know what the future of the club is, and you hit with the 10-point deduction. So straight away you go from looking up to basically trying to survive. So it was really frustrating. And I think if you'd ask any of the lads about that were in that team, it was really, really difficult and probably one of the toughest times I've had in my career. I've obviously had a worse time than that at Bury last season with the club actually folding. But that was the closest before the Bury situation that it had ever been to that.
And yet, within a few weeks, I mean, you were on the pitch in the game away at Wolves on the memorable night when Danny Butterfield got his hat-trick. What do you remember about that?
I just remember looking round and just thinking, like, what a group of players we've got here. Like, with all the stuff that was going on, that we were still going, and we didn't let the disappointments affect us. And then obviously to see Danny get his hat-trick, that was more like a dream.
and actually, I mean, that kind of brings, I was looking back at, you know, some of the players you played alongside. I mean, you'd got players like Darren Ambrose, who you had a very special link up with, and also a very young Wilf Zahar. Have you got particular memories of playing alongside them?
Both fantastic players. Not to forget Kleine, Victor Moses, Sean Scannell. Do you know what I mean? All quality players, and all gone on to obviously bigger things. You know, you look at like Victor Moses, what he's achieved, the headlines Wilf's getting now, and you could see that from a young age. I mean, as soon as they came in, they just weren't fazed at all. And I think Palace is one of the clubs that I've been at where the youngsters come through and they just play with no fear. And I'd definitely say during my career, I'd have to say Palace has definitely been the club where I've looked at the youngsters and thought, wow, these are producing like top quality young players. And I haven't seen that since. Like I've obviously played with players that have come through, but not so many at once. And I think that's a testament to the way the academy is running and the people and staff there.
Excellent. So I also wanted to just ask about, you know, what your favourite goal during your time was at Palace. I mean, you scored some really important ones. There was the overhead kick against Peterborough when we won that game 2-0, and the goal against Leeds the next year that kept us up again. What's your favourite goal of your time with us?
I'd probably say it was the goal against Peterborough, I think. Was that shortly after the administration, that goal?
Yeah, January 2010.
Yeah, that was it. I always remember just because even when I watched the goals back, I think I scored two in that game, did I?
And, yeah, you did.
Yeah, and I remember the second I started punching the floor and going a bit nuts because that was literally just the frustration of everything that was happening. And obviously we won the game and stuff. So when I look back, I think, why was I so angry? I mean, looking back, I do remember just the frustration of everything that was happening, and it was just sort of, it was more emotion and just, I think you connect them with the fans, do you know what I mean? Because you get that when it's just real emotion, you seem to see the fans, it bounces back and forth from the players to the fans. And when I look back, I'd say that was probably the best one, just because that was probably one of the most emotional I've ever felt during after scoring a goal.
So, and speaking of frustration, so Aaron McGeever has sent in a question, and I assume he's referring to a certain moment against Graham Dorans. Why did he lose his head and get sent off before one of our most important games? I think that's tongue in cheek.
Yeah, no, it's, you know what, that was probably one of my weaknesses when I was, like, younger, should I say. I wasn't that young, but I mean, like, younger than I am now. I always used to just sometimes get the red mist, and I honestly couldn't control it. And when I look back at that one, and it was because obviously I had longer hair at the time, and as I went down, I went to get up, and he pulled my hair down, so I was literally face planted on the floor, and I think I just straight away, that's what riled me up, and I would have been fine, but I think when we came head to head, it was literally a split second reaction where, I don't know if you probably, anyone who's ever played football at any level, sometimes you've had a little kick out or a lash out and you don't know what it is. It's immature, really. But anyone who's ever played football at any single level, I'm sure, has had the same sort of thing. And like I say, I regret it at the time. And luckily for me, it didn't have too much of effect on how the season finished. But I think with every red card, I could look back and say, I was stupid there, I was stupid here. But at the end of the day, you live and you learn. And I don't get many red cards these days, but that's probably because I'm not quick enough to catch anyone.
Yeah, well, and it probably, I presumably meant that you didn't get caught up with Clint Hill at Sheffield Wednesday, the game after as well, which might be a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, Chris... Well, I was there. I was actually there on the pitch, but I was running away. So,
Chris, carry on.
So I actually then wanted to move on to kind of post Palace. Really, so afterwards, you went to Leicester, but then a bit later you ended up at Bolton. So reunited with Dougie Friedman and a few other ex-Palace players as well. What are your memories of that time?
I was obviously at Leicester at the time. I'd been out on loan to Huddersfield, and it was a weird one really, because I did a podcast for Leicester TV the other day as well, and that was a weird one what happened at Leicester, because I think my first season I finished the season with 7 goals. I ended up captain of the side in the first season, and then never started, went back after pre-season ready to go, and then never ever started a game after that. And I think that was due to obviously the financial status. They'd brought a lot of players in, and basically they were just making sacrifices at the time. So I ended up going to Huddersfield on loan. It was Bristol City on loan, and then I went to Huddersfield, and then Dougie Friedman then gave me a shout, and obviously I knew Dougie from Palace days and stuff, so straight away it was a no-brainer for me. It was obviously only 30 minutes away from where I live now and stuff, so it made perfect sense. And then obviously I went there on loan, scored 6 goals during my loan period and then ended up signing permanently.
And I also, just a very different and jumping back in time a bit. So you worked under George Burley for the time that he was there. What are your memories of him as a manager?
Do you know what? It's mad to say, but I haven't got that many memories. When he first came, I think I was injured for the first couple of games, and then I think straight away from the off that season, it wasn't great. Do you know what I mean? That was no disrespect to George Burley, but we'd obviously lost a lot of players because of everything that was going on and stuff, and I just remember it being not the best of times, and there wasn't that togetherness that I'd been used to at Palace. And then obviously after the loss against, I think it was Millwall, we lost 3-0, I think. Jason Puncheon scored a hat-trick. And after that, I think that was obviously the final straw. But like I say, if I'm being honest, I haven't got that in my memories. Nothing springs to mind. Nothing was good and nothing was that bad, but it just wasn't great, as you could obviously tell with the results.
And during that season, your last season with Palace, you formed a partnership with James Vorm. So I just wanted to, you know, see what you thought about, you know, about him as a player and how you worked together.
Yeah, soon as he came into the club straight away, he obviously had a big reputation being the youngest player scorer in the Premiership. And soon as he came in, we sort of just had a bond straight away. And obviously, he'd lived in my home city for a number of years, so he knew a lot of people that I knew from home. So I'd never met him before until he came to Palace, but I knew he knew people I knew. And then obviously, because of that, we seemed to form a friendship off the pitch, which obviously turned into a friendship on the pitch. And I've gone on to play for 4 teams with him. And everywhere I've been with him, he's done what it says on the tin. He'll give you everything he's got. He's such a team player, and he'll get his goals as well. So as soon as he came to Palace, I think everyone could see straight away. I think he ended up top goal scorer that season when he came one ahead of me. He always reminds me. So yeah, nothing but fond memories of linking up with him at Palace.
You talk about your hometown. Are you a Liverpool fan, an Everton fan, or a Tranmere fan?
Liverpool all day, but I support Tranmere as well. But obviously, because I'm there. But I've been a Red since I was young, very young, and it was mad. I can't remember when Liverpool, when Gerrard had the slip, and I remember tweeting on the game when we played Palace, and I was desperate for Liverpool to win, I have to say, because I am. I've grew up a Red just the way. But normally I always support Palace whenever they play. But in that game, I needed Liverpool. And all the Palace fans were getting on me. And I was just like, I can't win in this situation.
No. But you must be proud then if your son's playing Liverpool now.
Yeah. He's doing really well at the moment. He's 14 now. And like I say, he loves the game and they think highly of him there. So he's only 14. There's a long way to go, but he's on the right track and he's got the right mentality. So hopefully he can achieve his dreams.
Excellent. Well, one more question from Chris. And then I think Patrick, who's also on the call, wants to chat to you about your international career as well. So we'll get on to that in a second.
What I really, you know, what wanted to say, just, you know, taking the opportunity to broadcast for a minute, is just to say, you know, thank you so much for what you did when you were with our club, because I mean, you were absolutely my favourite player when you were with us for all of that time, and I was gutted when you left. And I was talking to my ex-girlfriend yesterday, because we had season tickets together at that time, and when I told her I was going to be talking to you, she was really thrilled, and, you know, said to say something similar, like, thank you for what you did, because it was so great.
I appreciate that so much. And like I always say in every interview, like, I think in all my career, I think probably the most special bond I've had with a fan base has been Colchester United and Crystal Palace. And like I say, Crystal Palace has always have a place in my heart. I can remember at the end of one season when I was I got the fan supporter of the year, and I went across, I think one of the lads asked would have come to the pub after the game across the road. So I went over there and accepted the award, and that, and the fans were just unbelievable with me. And I'll never obviously forget that sort of connection I had with you guys.
Hey, Neil, Patrick here. Great to speak to you. Really a pleasure. I'm actually based in the States now. So long-time Palace supporter. But I noticed that you got a late call-up to play for Guyana in 2015. Did really well there. I know you qualified for your grandfather, but how did that whole call-up come about?
Well, I'd obviously always known about that I had Guyanese heritage and stuff. But the programme there, like they'd sometimes go 2 or 3 years without playing matches and stuff like that. So I'd never really thought about going over there because obviously I was young at the time, and my career in England was taking the front seat. And then it wasn't, like you say, till 2015 that they actually got going again, and after a long layoff with no international football because of stuff that was going on in the country. And then I got approached, and at that point in my career, I thought, why not? I thought, I never got the chance to meet my grandfather because he passed when my dad was young. So I didn't know too much about Guyana, and I didn't have any sort of connection to where my grandfather had come from. So I thought, I'm going to do this. This is an experience, and it'll give me the opportunity to actually go over to a country that I probably would never visit anyway because I didn't know any family from there, literally didn't have no connections. So I thought, why not? And then I went over there for the first time, and it was an eye-opener the very first time. The facilities weren't great. Probably the whole setup was way behind what I'd been used to and stuff, obviously grown in England where everything's done completely to the highest standard. But it, like I say, I went back and then kept playing, and each and every time I went back, it seemed to just improve, and we started getting new players and players coming over from England as well. And I think by people like myself and Matthew Briggs going over there sort of showed other people from different countries, yeah, I'm going to go over there. And then we ended up getting a really good squad together, and then obviously qualifying for the Gold Cup last summer, which was a massive achievement. That was the first time ever that Guyana had ever qualified for any sort of major tournaments and stuff. So to be a part of that, and obviously to captain the team in the first game against the States was something that I never could have dreamed of when I first went over there.
Yeah, I was going to say, I got to watch a lot of the Gold Cup. Obviously, I'm over here, and you know, the region's dominated by US and Mexico, but you had a really good tournament 2019, scored 3 goals. You know, what are your experiences of last year's Gold Cup?
Yeah, it was like I said, it was fantastic. Never in a million years did I think that I'd get to represent Guyana at the Gold Cup, playing against the likes of Panama, United States, in some amazing stadiums and stuff. So on a personal note, obviously, it was fantastic, scoring 3 and 3. And I was nominated for one of the players of the tournament and stuff, which was unbelievable and just something that I was so proud of. And obviously, me children couldn't get over there because they had school and stuff. So just even the memories of speaking to them the day after, because they get to stay up and watch me on TV. Just memories that I know will stick with them for the rest of their lives, as my kids are 14, 11 and 10 now. So I'm sure they'll always remember that sort of stuff. And then obviously to just represent a nation that has had tough times and has been sort of fighting to be noticed, and especially within football, to give them an opportunity to have that pride and see their nation represented at a major tournament was amazing. And it wasn't until after I scored the first goal against Panama and I got off the pitch and then got my phone, I didn't realise how much it actually meant. The videos of celebrations back in the country, and I was just like, wow, I honestly didn't even... Because when it was a penalty as well, and I honestly didn't have a clue how big it was for the country. Do you know what I mean? I just thought, oh, yeah, it's just another pen. And then to score it and then realise what it meant to people was just like something that I can't describe.
Yeah, so it was tough group, Panama, qualify the World Cup USA. So you guys did really well considering. So congratulations. Yeah. Cheers.
Thank you very much.
I mean, that's pretty good work for a 36-year-old, isn't it? Really?
36. Oh, yeah.
Really is, yeah.
Yeah, I was 36 then anyway. I'm 37 now, mate.
Yeah. Same age as myself. Right, we've got a few other questions. We've got one more football-related one, and then we'll go on to other topics briefly before we let you go. Palace Ash, just wanted to let you know, Neil, your record against Palace is played 5, won 5. What's it like playing against Palace? And I think the underlying tone there is stop winning against Palace. But
I don't think I'll ever get the chance to play against them again. So you're just safe.
Yeah. So then we've got, I wanted to chat a bit about music and stuff like that. So Spironi, which is at Caulfield7 on Twitter, which this made me laugh. I don't know if you're going to take offence or not. Are you surprised that you never got picked up by a record label? To me, .. you were the Northern Craig David. I think that's harsh.
No, I'm definitely not surprised I never got picked up by a record label. To be honest, I've never actually ever wanted to be an artist. That was just a way for me to show that I like music, but the main journey and goal for me was always to just write and produce and stuff like that. And like I say, I wasn't taking it too serious then whatsoever. It was just a bit of fun, something different. And like I say, as I got older now, I've started to take it a little bit more serious, doing a diploma in audio engineering stuff and writing songs and that. And funnily enough, I've just had a song took off by a girl from the United States who's been signed to Interscope. I think she's had like over 1 million views on one of her tracks on YouTube and stuff. So when I got the opportunity to do that, that was something that was amazing. And I got sort of a feeling similar to what I get from football. And that's always what I knew sort of that I'd get. And I knew football didn't last forever. So I've just been working hard in the background, basically just trying to get up to a certain level before I actually start putting seriously stuff out.
So this is you producing? Because I found it quite hard to find some of your stuff. So this is for other artists.
Yeah, for other artists. Like I said, I never ever wanted to be an artist myself. I've always just been more interested in writing songs and producing songs, and that's always been the sort of in the background, that's where I'd like to go. So you probably won't ever hear much of it coming from me, do you know what I mean? But I don't do music for that, do you know what I mean? I'm not in it to make a name for myself or to do it. I just do it simply because I just love doing it. And that was how I started football. That's how I like want to live my life, doing things that I love. And like I say, if they end up paying the bills as well, that's not too bad. But at the end of the day, I just like to do things that I'm passionate about.
Well, that probably brings me on to another question from at Magic72. Is Neil still involved with various app ventures? I'm not sure what he's referring to there, but maybe you know.
Oh, yeah. I think just after I'd left Palace, I had an app that came out. It was called Spitter 2. And it was basically similar to Twitter, but the difference was it was voice notes rather than 140 characters. It was voice notes, so you could retweet the voice notes, you could listen to people's voice notes, and started off like literally doing really well. But obviously, I was new to the tech world. My other partners were new to the tech world, and we got it to a certain point and was just like, whoa, this is actually too big for us, do you know what I mean? Because you'd obviously have to keep funding it and stuff like that. And then in the end, we just cut our losses and ended up selling the data and stuff. So it wasn't too bad. It was a great experience. And like I say, learned so much from the actual experience and didn't lose any money. That was the main thing.
Good, good. Right, I'm just going to end up with one more comment from Robert Bailey. Absolute legend for me while at Palace. Got stuck in and gave it 100% all the time. And if I was to ask you what you wanted Palace fans to remember you for or as, would it be that? Would it be something similar?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, like I said, I've got so much respect for the Palace fans. They are a fan base that really, really do support the players through thick and thin. And that was just obvious to see. And my time out there, especially with some of the tough times, I think, like I say, I've always been a player that will give 100%. I've never claimed to be the most skillful, the best technical. Do you know what I mean? But the one thing that I will always say that is that I will always give 100% no matter the situation. And that when I hear that coming from the fans, that they seen that and appreciated, then I know that I've been true to myself, and I can't thank them enough.
Excellent. And Neil, for me, like, really appreciate you giving up your time. I mean, for people listening, he's just volunteered when we've messaged him, no money or anything like that. So that's a man that's worthy of your respect. So cheers for that, Neil, and I'm sure we'll speak to you at some point again.
Thank you very much for having me, guys.
No paywall, no subscription. Back of the Nets. Fan-created podcasts, videos and articles. Free forever.
Okay, and it's going to be fairly hard to follow up that lovely interview with Neil Dance. Very sage, interesting man he is. And we thank him again for joining us, taking his own time up to do so. So before we finish, though, as ever, we've got a quiz. And because of the fact that Sam tends to do quite random ones, and that tends to anger certain members of the panel, Patrick's gone ahead and done one this week. So without further ado, Chris, producer Mikey, and myself will go head-to-head in Patrick's quiz.
Okay, well, first, I won't be as great as Sam, because I love her quiz, but since I'm so bad at being on the quiz, I'd rather try myself at the quiz master. So... This week's quiz will be Crystal Palace FC former managers. The quiz focuses on men who have at some point in the past managed the mighty Crystal Palace Football Club, created by me, and hopefully it will be as difficult or as fun as Sam's quiz. So you guys ready?
I've got trepidation after you explain that, but yes, let's give it a go.
Chris, you ready?
Oh, yes.
All right, I'll start. Question number one. This manager went to Quarry Bank High School, the same one as John Lennon. Who was it? A, Paul Hart, B, Laurie Scott, C, Steve Coppell, or D, Dario Guardi? And the answer was Steve Coppell. Who got that right?
What?
Who got that right?
Sorry, that was me.
Nice one. As we all know, Steve Coppell was born and raised in Liverpool.
So was Paul Hart born and raised in Liverpool, or am I making that up?
No, the other three were just former managers.
Okay.
But I think Hart's a Scouser as well.
Yeah, I thought he was.
But... he might have been.
Okay.
Which is why I put it there, try and trick you.
Trick question. I like it.
Next question. This ex-Palace manager ended his playing career at Crewe Alexandra in the 70s. Who was it? A, Neil Warnock, B, Sam Allardyce, C, Tony Pulis, or D, Dave Bassett?
They all sound like they could and should have ended their career at Crewe Alexandra in the 70s. Oh, no.
Again.
Love it.
Every week.
No one got it right. The answer was Neil Warnock. Played 21 times for Crewe Alexandra in 1978-79 before retiring at the age of 30 to become a manager.
And I had a lovely time. A lovely time.
Yeah, I said to Sharon.
I said, I want to go to Crewe, see out my time. Right, okay. I haven't got any points yet.
For a change. How many matches did Malcolm Allison win at Palace? 45, 49, 35, or 52?
Not a clue.
The great Malcolm Allison.
Do a Chris. Let's go for a round number.
Someone got it right.
Come on.
52. Who got that right? Mikey again. This week, from 1973-1976, Malcolm Allison won 52 matches, drew 45, lost 49, and had a winning percentage of 35. Where the other numbers came from?
Interesting. I mean, that sort of rank in the middle of... I remember we discussing averages of wins for managers in the past, and they sort of go between about 32 and 40, so he's sort of rank in the middle.
Yeah, the thing was, like I said, the fact he got relegated two consecutive seasons kind of takes away from how good he was. He was a great manager. Exactly. That's a pretty poor record to have in a consecutive relegations. But I loved him. 76 FA Cup semi-final will never be forgotten. Where did Dario Gradi get his first job in management? A. Sutton. B. Crewe. C. Dulwich Hamlet. D. Wimbledon.
See, I'm suspicious that Crewe's come back up again, but...
you think? I pulled the Sam here. The answer is... Sutton.
Yes. Really?
Correct.
Okay.
Boom.
But of course, Dario Gradi was associated with Crewe for 36 years, hence why I put that in there. But no, he started at Sutton. Unbelievable.
Okay, yeah. When was he at Sutton? Do you know?
I could look it up if you'd like.
I've always had a soft spot for Sutton United. I think
that's when you were... I put it in there, honestly, because of you, because I know you're always talking about Sutton. So I'll tell you right now when he was there. 76 or 77. That's his first job.
Okay. I mean, I've betrayed Sutton now and become a Hastings United fan for my sins. But yeah, place in my heart, and I shouldn't have gone Dulwich Hamlet.
Chris on the board. Nice one. So we are now on to question 5. Who named Alan Smith Director of Academy at Fulham? A. Ray Wilkins. B. Kevin Keegan. C. Chris Coleman. Or D. Roy Hodgson?
Oh, these are tough.
Great
Alan Smith. That is really tough.
These are very tough.
I tried.
It's great though. I can still get the bronze medal without any points. So.
Keegan.
It was indeed Kevin Keegan. One of Kevin Keegan's first appointments was joining Fulham in 97 was to name and employ Alan Smith as the academy director. And yes, the other three were obviously Fulham managers. So I put them in, and three of them obviously were Palace related: Wilkins, Coleman, and Hodgson.
Ah, yeah, I should have thought of that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so, I like Alan Smith. But that promotion year was brilliant. Move on now to question 6 with Mike in first and Chris in second. Great question, this one. Which former Palace manager was an employee at British Aerospace after leaving university? A. Lenny Lawrence. B. Steve Coppell. C. Alan Pardew. Or D. Ian Dowie?
I cannot see Ian Dowie works for British Aerospace, but maybe he did.
He's a smart guy, isn't he?
He certainly is.
There we go.
Oh, come on now.
Oh, my God.
Have you got one yet?
Ian Dowie went to University of Hertfordshire, to study engineering and worked at British Aerospace while playing non-league football. He's very, very smart.
Ian, this is a public apology. A public apology to you. I am sorry. I went with Alan Pardew. What he was probably doing at university was smoozing up whoever he could chat to at the local club. So apologies, Ian Dowie.
He was a window fitter.
Yes, correct. Everyone else, Steve Couples, also has a university degree. Very smart man. But yes, the answer was actually Ian Dowie. Shocked me too, by the way, even though I knew he was smart, but very impressive, Ian.
6 questions and no right, so who's laughing? Ian Dowie.
Have you got bounce back ability, Mike?
Well, we'll see.
Question number 7. This former manager suffered from dyslexia as a child. A. Burt Head. B. Sam Allardyce. C. Paul Hart. Or D. Tony Pulis?
Where did you find this nugget of information out?
All of them on Wikipedia, mate. A lot of research. Oh, okay. The answer is Sam Allardyce. Sam Allardyce was unsuccessful in his 11-plus exam, discovering later in life that he suffers from dyslexia. Who knew?
Okay. Well, not me, I'll tell you that.
None of us knew.
Once again, I love this quiz.
You're smashing this.
I am. The quiz master smashing instead of the contestant. Yeah. We are now on to question number 8 with 3 more to go. Come on, Mike, you can do this.
I could have a guinea pig here smashing at a keyboard and probably be doing better than me.
Question number 8. Which former Palace manager has the most England caps? A. Trevor Francis. B. Peter Taylor. C. Steve Coppell. Or D. Terry Venables? Most England caps. The answer is...
Yeah,
Trevor Francis. Mike and Mikey got it right. Well done.
Trevor.
Go through real quickly. Venables had only 2 England caps. Taylor had 4. Cooper had 42 and Francis had 52. We all know Taylor got his first England cap while playing for Palace in the old third division, but he was also the last English footballer to score two goals in his first two internationals, a feat equaled by the great Ricky Lambert in 2013.
The great
Ricky
Lambert.
I know.
I did not know that Cooper had as many caps as that.
Again, you probably don't remember, mate. I remember United is a great right winger and played a lot. Played unfortunately, you know, again, his career ended by injury, but no, he was a very good player. Stevie Cooper. Okay. Next question, number 9. Which former Palace manager had the most professional appearances? A. Ian Holloway, B. Paul Hart, C. George Burley, or D. Dougie Friedman?
Oh, it's got to be one of two for me.
Paul Hart's due, isn't he?
You think, right? But it is.
No.
Really?
George Burley. So, a little background. Ian Holloway had 598 appearances in his career. Paul Hart had 568. Dougie Friedman had 527. But George Burley had 628. If you guys don't know, he had a very long career and successful career at Ipswich. And a much better player than manager, by the way. But yeah.
Two points I'd like to make here. One is, I think in the entire time I've been on Back of the Nest, George Burley has never been discussed and he's come up twice this week. Secondly, Dougie Friedman has the lowest caps and that's who I went for. Lowest games and that's who I went for. So,
interesting, yes. All that long careers, though. I mean, Holloway, look at that, 598 matches. Yeah. That's brilliant. And even Paul Hart, which I remember at Forest, but he played for a long, long time. I'm impressed. The last question I'm going to warn you is very... very difficult. I saved it for last on purpose. But let's just do a recap, going to the last question. In third, Mike with 7 points. Standard, sorry. In second, silver medal, Chris with 8. But once again, smashing it. And I know for a fact he did not cheat. Mikey with 32 points.
What?
Fantastic. I don't know how he does it every, and I mean, Chris, every single week he smashes the quiz. This week that's he could amazing. Not have cheated, by the way. Yeah, brilliant. So the final question, number 10. Who won the first trophy in the history of our wonderful club? A, Fred Mavin, B, Edmund Goodman, C, Jack Tretherdown, or D, Tom Bromlow?
I mean, all household names. All household names.
Exactly. Why did he
laugh? Oh, Edmund Goodman, you stitched me up there, kid.
You've heard of him before, right, obviously. Again. Mike again. Edmund Goodman is the longest-serving Palace manager, taking charge of 613 matches over an 18-year period. Was the first manager to win the old Football League Division 3 South. The others all were runners-up.
Wow. Well, there you go. Edmund Goodman, you are indeed the man.
And once again, got to give it to Mikey. Smashed it with 40 points. Absolutely brilliant, Mikey. Well done.
Thank
Chris,
you.
Mike, well played.
I mean, you say well played. Both of us got 1 out of 10.
I tried to make it difficult but fun, but I guess it was just more difficult than fun, so I apologise.
No, it was great. Great quiz. If anyone at home legitimately got 10 out of 10, message in and tell us your secret. Presumably, you are the Rain Man. There you go. Okay, well, we'll wrap it up there for the pods. Hope you enjoyed that chat with Neil Downs. Hope you enjoyed the quiz. And we'll be back with more irreverent lockdown chat very soon.
Back of the Chest. Coronavirus Self-Isolation Podcast.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.